Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC and New Yorkers, you have a new city council speaker. His name is Corey Johnson. He got his start in the council in 2013 when he was elected a city council member for District 3, which includes Greenwich Village, Chelsea, Hell's Kitchen, and parts of Midtown. Now a city council speaker, he will also be presiding over council meetings and hopefully getting consensus on major issues. Every proposed piece of legislation is submitted through the speaker's office, and it's arguably the second most powerful role in the city. City Council Speaker Corey Johnson is joining us now to talk about his agenda for the council and to help get us help us to get to know him a little better in general. Welcome, Speaker Johnson.
Thank you, Brian. I love WNYC, and I'm so honored to be here this morning.
And listeners, do you have a question for your new City Council Speaker? Call us up, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. You know how we do Ask the Mayor every week. It is Ask the Speaker today, 212-433-9692, and as we did from time to time with Melissa Mark Viverito. So you're not originally from the city. Where'd you grow up, and what brought you to New York in the first place?
I grew up about 25 miles north of Boston. When I was in high school, I was a pretty good athlete. I don't know if I'm still a good athlete, but I was a good athlete then. And when I was a junior in high school, I was elected captain of the football team, but I was terribly depressed and despondent and suicidal because I was struggling with my sexual orientation. It was about 6 months after Matthew Shepard had been murdered in Wyoming, which was a national tragedy. I came out at my school, and I had a good, affirming, accepting story, a loving family, played my senior year out, took a year off after high school, traveled the country, told my story, ended up in New York on a wing and on a prayer, connected with the city, decided I needed to live here, moved here May 1st, 2001, and the rest is history.
Is history. And so you're openly gay, as you were just indicating. You're HIV positive, openly, and a substance abuse survivor. You're 35. How does your background with sexuality and disease and substance abuse influence the issues and policies that you find central to fight for?
Well, I don't want to sound hokey or saccharine, but I got involved in activism originally through the LGBT community to try to make a difference and help people. And that is why I got involved in electoral politics and why I ran for city council over 4 years ago. I wanted to try to make the world a better place. I wanted to try to serve the neighborhoods on the West Side that I love. And it's why I ran for speaker, to even have a bigger impact for the city of New York. So being someone who's openly gay, being the only openly HIV positive elected official in the state of New York, being clean and sober from drugs and alcohol for the last 8.5 years, I got sober at the age of 27. It is my biggest accomplishment in life, much more than being elected to the council, much more than being speaker. It influences my ability to have sensitivity and compassion for New Yorkers who need help.
There are so many people in leadership around here recently who are from the Boston area. Bloomberg was, I think, De Blasio was, right? And, well, the last city council speaker, she was originally from Puerto Rico, so that's different. But here you are, another person from Boston.
You know, my mom, when I ran for council in 2013, my mom's my best friend. I love her. She sat at her computer in Salem, Massachusetts, and she made over 7,000 phone calls to senior citizens in my district. And I'd be walking down the street, Brian, and senior citizens, older women, would say, "Your mother called me. I couldn't understand a word she said because of her Boston accent." So I am proud of where I'm from, but in my heart, I am a New Yorker. I love this city, and I want to see it succeed.
What do you love about the city? What kept you here all these years?
You know, I think there are some people that when you come to New York, you connect to it immediately. You connect to the kinetic energy. You connect to being on the subway when it works. You connect to the culture and the nightlife and the diversity of New York City, the cuisine. You connect with all of that. And for me, I'm so grateful to live in the greatest city in the United States and probably in the world. And the moment I moved here, I felt like this is my home.
And you have some pretty big shoes to fill, since Melissa Mark Viverito set a high bar for the role. She became very well known. She had major policy influences, like on closing Rikers Island. What parts of her legacy do you most respect, and what parts do you plan on trying to emulate, either in style or in substance?
Well, I really admire Melissa taking on the fight around Rikers, implementing and putting together the Lipman Commission, headed by former Chief Justice of the Court of Appeals in New York, Jonathan Lipman, which was the catalyst for talking about closing Rikers. Melissa did a tremendous amount of work on immigration and protecting the undocumented in New York City, even before the Trump administration was put into place. And I really think she did some amazing things in changing the culture of the council and empowering members, ensuring that members were treated fairly and equally. I'm going to continue that. One thing that I think is slightly different, though I think Melissa was independent in her own way, I am going to ensure that the council uses its full charter mandated authority in every way that comes to legislation, land use, the budget, and oversight. We are going to use our charter mandated powers. We're not going to flinch. We're not going to waver. We want to work with the mayor when we agree with him. We want to get things done. When we don't agree with him, it's not personal. We are a separate, co-equal branch of government, and we will act that way.
Well, the mayor and Speaker Mark Viverito were pretty tight allies. They had some differences. For example, she did have to push him into the pledge to close Rikers. But it sounds like you're saying something different. You're going to use the oversight powers that the council has. So what's a starting point? What are you skeptical of with respect to Mayor de Blasio that you might articulate as a starting point of things to look at?
Well, the mayor and I are both left of center progressives. So on big issues, ideologically, we agree. But when it comes to the council's role in the budget process, an $86 billion budget, when it comes to us being the final arbiter of land use decisions, as the charter says, we have to vote on those. When it comes to having oversight of city agencies, whether it be homelessness or the Department of Education or other agencies that affect the day-to-day lives of New Yorkers, we are going to use our full charter mandated authority. It's never going to be personal. I'm not going to take pot shots at the mayor. The council has a unique ability to impact the lives of 8.5 million New Yorkers. We will do so in a positive and constructive yet independent way as a body.
Here's a caller from your district. Dara in Hell's Kitchen. You're on WNYC with the new Speaker of the City Council, Corey Johnson. Hi, Dara.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You can hear me?
Just fine.
Yes. Okay. Hi. I'm pleased to hear Speaker Johnson, and I wrote his office recently, and his office responded to me very quickly, which I was very pleased to as well about. My question is what you would like to do for traffic, particularly in Hell's Kitchen, with the Port Authority and the buses and Uber, and also especially in terms of increased bike lanes.
Thank you, Dara, for calling in today, and I'm grateful and honored to be your council member. There is a major congestion problem in New York City. Congestion is a huge issue in my own district. If Dara lives in Hell's Kitchen, 9th Avenue from where the entrance to the Lincoln Tunnel is all the way up to the West 50s, every single day is like a parking lot. Same thing on 10th Avenue with buses lining up outside of the Port Authority. But it's not just an issue that's unique to Hell's Kitchen. You go on the FDR Drive, you go to Lower Manhattan, you go to the Upper West Side, you even go to the outer boroughs on the BQE or other places. There is a major congestion problem. I support congestion pricing. We need to disincentivize cars from coming into the city. We need to put money into mass transit, rapid bus service. Move New York has a plan on lessening the tolls on the East River, on the outer borough crossings and tolling the East River bridges. There's a proposal to put a surcharge on for-hire vehicles like Uber and Lyft. I support congestion pricing. I'm not hung up on the specifics. What I'm hung up on is disincentivizing cars, making New York a less congested place. It has an impact on the quality of life of New Yorkers, the air quality of New Yorkers, the economy of New York City. We need to tackle this issue. Other global cities like London have been able to do this.
It's funny. In the Bloomberg days, the proposals for congestion pricing were sort of for their own sake, to do something about congestion for its own sake and for the environment, in particular air quality. Now it has kind of morphed in the de Blasio Andrew Cuomo era to being about how do you fund the MTA adequately. And so you have the governor coming out with congestion pricing for driving in Midtown as, you know, as a money-raising scheme for the MTA. De Blasio prefers a millionaire's tax. Do you also support the millionaire's tax? Are you, as a progressive, for both of those things? Or where do you come down? Because between the two of them, they seem to be either or.
I support both. I support a millionaire's tax and I support congestion pricing. What I want to see happen is for us to actually get something through the state legislature. I believe we need a unified, progressive, democratic majority in the state Senate so that we can pass things like a millionaire's tax. We can pass things like congestion pricing. We can do more criminal justice reform. The only way to do that is to get a progressive, unified, democratic majority in the state Senate, which I am committed to doing. We need to tackle big issues, which means we need a progressive majority that we have in the assembly right now. We also need it in the state Senate.
Cassius in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with the new New York City Council Speaker, Corey Johnson. Hey, Cassius.
Hey, good morning, guys. You know, there's this, I was just reading this Jeremiah Moss article about Langan's pub and restaurant has been on Broadway for like 25 years. They're trying to raise the rent from $16,000 a month up to $52,000 a month.
Wow.
And so now this place has to close. And we all know this type of thing is already ravaged the city all over. There's already, we've already lost, you know, many legendary places, and we see empty storefronts everywhere. You know, is this new speaker going to really try to make inroads into creating some kind of rent control system to protect businesses?
This has been an issue, and Cassius, thank you, that was stuck in the old city council, how much commercial rent control people felt would be upheld by the courts as constitutional, or how much people wanted to interfere with the market in that respect. Where are you?
This is a major, major, major crisis in New York City and my own district and throughout the city. You have places like Cassius just mentioned. You walk through Greenwich Village, not too far from the WMIC studios. A survey was done, 120 empty storefronts just sitting there fallow and causing a blight on the neighborhood. We're losing dry cleaners. We're losing bodegas. We're losing shoe repair stores. And we're losing unique places that have been around a long time. There's a bill called the Small Business Job Survival Act, which isn't entirely commercial rent control, but it talks about mediation between landlords and small businesses. I am open to looking at that. I think we have to do other things. If we could come up with a tax abatement plan to incentivize landlords to not raise rents on small businesses if they enter into a good faith lease for a certain amount of time, this is a major crisis in New York City. We're losing the character and uniqueness of our neighborhoods, and I want to take this on as speaker.
Now, the speaker's race was full of men until toward the end when the council member Inez Barron threw her hat in the ring. Only 11, I think, of the 51 city council members are women. Did you watch the Golden Globes last night?
Oprah for president.
And that may be a serious topic of conversation now after that. There was already some speculation about Oprah for president, and then that did sound to some people last night kind of like a campaign speech. That's not why I asked you, but if you're going to go there, Oprah for president for real?
Oprah for president. And you get a car, and you get a car, and you get Oprah for president.
As speaker, what will you do to address gender and racial equity within city council before we get to the rest of the city, if it's really 40 to 11?
So there are a myriad of ways. It's embarrassing and shameful that there are only 11 women in the New York City Council. We have to hold ourselves accountable. I'm committed to an initiative that is being led by women in the council and women politically in the city called 21 in 21, which would seek to elect 21 women in 2021. I am supportive of that. I've gone from having a staff of six people as an individual council member to over 300 people in the city council itself. I want to ensure that women, people of color, LGBT people, immigrants are all represented in the council, but also across government. The conversation that was had with Jumaane Williams, Robert Cornegy, Inez Barron, and other folks in the speaker's race was an important conversation to have about race and gender in government and in leadership positions. I am committed to working with my colleagues, working with other stakeholders, so the council reflects New York City, but also so that government generally. We have hundreds of thousands of jobs in New York City, and we have to ensure that those jobs reflect the diversity and breadth of our amazing population here in the city.
Have we gotten to a point where if you were elected speaker in the 80s or 90s as an HIV-positive gay man, it would have been groundbreaking diversity? Today, since you're a white male, HIV-positive gay man, it's actually not so much?
Well, Tom Duane, one of my predecessors, came out as being HIV-positive at the height of the AIDS epidemic in the late 80s, and he won a council seat in 1991. He is a trailblazer, a friend, and a mentor of mine, very brave man. Being gay and being HIV-positive and growing up in public housing and not come from a wealthy family is not the same thing in any way as being a person of color. With the history of slavery and Jim Crow and segregation and racism in our country, my experience in no way can ever compare to that. But my record is one that has stood with communities of color that I think has been right on those issues. And my sensitivity, because of my own unique experience and story, being someone that has been name-called because of my sexual orientation, understanding the stigma of being HIV positive, I hope that gives me the sensitivity and the compassion to work with all marginalized and vulnerable and targeted communities in New York City.
Sandra in Queens, you're on WNYC with a new speaker. Hi, Sandra.
Hi. Sounds exciting. I want to bring up the issues of motorcyclists when you're talking about congestion pricing. Maybe if you make it, we don't have to pay to cross the bridges and tunnels, you'll have motorcyclists or even looking at licensure of electric bikes, since there's some pushback on that. And also we need parking, motorcycle-only parking, or if we're going to pay the muni meter, where do we put our tickets? All these issues need to be addressed. Maybe we can get a commission to look at alternative vehicles when you're doing congestion pricing as well.
You know, Sandra, I hadn't thought much about motorcycles. I want to ensure that our city is less congested, that pedestrians are safe, that we have safe streets. That's why I think the Vision Zero initiative has been a good thing for the city of New York. I'm always open to talk about things that affect all type of folks that are trying to get around the city, but I have to think a little bit more of how this would uniquely affect people who use motorcycles.
I saw a stat over the weekend, Vision Zero in 2017 was a great success in terms of reducing pedestrian deaths, a 32% reduction in pedestrian deaths over the prior year. That's pretty darn good. Although funny enough, it's not funny, but ironically enough, motorcycle deaths and bicycle deaths were up, which might indicate, I don't know what it indicates about motorcycles, might indicate just that there's a lot more bicycle usage, so more opportunity to have crashes with cars. Any thoughts about Vision Zero?
Vision Zero has been a smashing success. Can we do better? We can always do better. I believe the mayor had a press conference yesterday in Queens talking about some of these statistics, Brian. You look at Queens Boulevard, which was named the Boulevard of Death for many years because it was so dangerous for pedestrians to cross. I believe in the last many years, there hasn't been a single pedestrian fatality since the Department of Transportation did street calming measures to protect pedestrians. We need to continue these efforts. We need to disincentivize trucks and buses and cars from coming in. That's what we need to do to protect people.
The other thing that the caller just raised was electric bicycles. And this has broken out as a controversy on this show because we had an Ask the Mayor question for the mayor one day that seemed to result in a policy change. And the question was from an Upper West Side resident who felt that the electric bikes that were being used as delivery vehicles were posing a hazard for people in the neighborhood and wanted to see stores, not the bicyclists themselves, the delivery people themselves, who tend to be, you know, low-paid immigrants, but the stores fine more. And then the mayor announced the policy change toward that direction. And then there was a backlash where advocates for immigrants were saying, even if you're fining the stores, what you're doing is removing a way for the immigrant delivery people to make a little more money. And there are no stats on electric bikes actually causing deaths, causing any deaths out there. And I'm not sure about injuries. So is this an issue you've looked at and come to a position on?
I hear complaints from my own district and my own constituents about electric bikes. There is a concern. There's a concern generally. I'm not here to villainize people who use bikes or e-bikes across the city. I think it's better, again, to get people out of cars and do things that are more environmentally friendly. Cyclists need to obey the law as well. They need to not drive on sidewalks. They need to obey traffic signals. They need to not go against traffic to ensure that pedestrians feel safe. I feel a little split on the e-bike issue because I want to protect the immigrants who are using the e-bikes while at the same time ensuring New Yorkers feel safe. I think there's a concern that if you fine the restaurants, the businesses, they're going to pass that fine along to their employees. So ultimately, it is going to hurt these low-income immigrants who already are in a precarious financial situation.
A follow-up on what you said before about the commercial rent problem and all kinds of stores closing under the pressure of insanely rising rents. One of my colleagues in the New York City Press Corps heard your answer and tweeted that that's a little cooler than your prior statements on this, he thinks. And so were you a little more kind of pro commercial rent tax as an individual council member when you couldn't actually push it through? Now that you're the speaker and you have much more power, you want to slow down a little bit and take a look at all sides a little more?
I am committed to finding a solution on this. I still have to have the opportunity to sit with my colleagues. I am not going to run the body with an iron fist. We have to be run by consensus. I think there is an appetite with a majority of council members to think creatively about fixing this. There is a bill that Councilmember Palma, who's now no longer in the city council, I believe Ruth Messenger started this bill in the 1980s, the Small Business Job Survival Act. I made a commitment during the speaker's race to have a hearing on the bill. I am still committed to doing that. I'm not sure if that is the exact solution, but I am open to figuring that out, as well as other things to stem the tide and the bleeding of loss of small business. It's one of the biggest issues in New York City.
We're going to run out of time in a minute. What haven't I asked you about policy-wise that might be a Cory Johnson priority or something you just want to talk about this morning?
Well, there's so many issues that the city faces. I think crime is at an all-time low. We should feel good about that. Tourism is up. We should feel good about that. Unemployment is at a record low. We should feel good about that. We still have a homelessness crisis. We are seeing what's happening with NYCHA over the last few days with the cold weather, the boilers, some of them from the 1950s. It's embarrassing. We have families who can't afford to live in New York City. The rent is too damn high. The cost of food has gone up. I take the subway almost every single day, $121 for a monthly MetroCard pass. Subways are in a state of disrepair, and New Yorkers are fed up. So even though we have some good statistics, we still have a lot of improvement. I'm going to look at all this with my colleagues. And then lastly, Brian, I want to tell you I am deeply honored. This is an important job. I'm taking it very seriously, but also we're going to have fun. We're going to have fun. I love to dance. I love the culture of New York City. I love music. I love seeing the neighborhoods. Running for speaker, I got to see every neighborhood across the city. This is an incredible city. You can be serious. You can tackle the issues. You can do it with a smile, and you can still go out and dance and eat and do all those things. That is what I'm going
to
do.
Huh. So are you glad to see the old cabaret laws gone?
Absolutely. Councilman Rafael Espinal did an incredible job. Brian, I'll go dancing with you in Upper Manhattan any day that you want.
Now that it's allowed, maybe I'll take you up on it. By the way, what drives you crazy about New York?
What drives me crazy about New York?
You talked about you know, what you love about it, and somebody who grew up in Massachusetts, and there's so many things you appreciate about the city now. What drives you crazy about, even maybe something that somebody who didn't grow up, I mean, somebody who did grow up here might not even be able to see?
I moved here in 2001, as I said. When I moved to West 15th Street, where I live in Chelsea, in 2001, rent was affordable. Now I live in a 319 square foot studio apartment, and my rent is $3,000 a month. The rent is too damn high. That makes me crazy. And I get a good salary. I get good benefits. I can afford that rent. There are plenty of New Yorkers who cannot afford what's happening. I don't know if a 19-year-old can move to New York like I did on a wing and on a prayer and on a dream. We need to ensure we don't lose the creative talent in young people to places like Detroit and Pittsburgh. We need to keep New York City the greatest city in the world, and I am committed to doing that.
The brand new New York City Council Speaker, Corey Johnson. His district is on what you might call the Lower West Side of Manhattan, and now in very real ways, he represents the entire city of New York. Thank you so much for coming on and within your first few days in office, and we look forward to having you back many times.
I want to come back. I love WIC. I love the Brian Lehrer Show. Please invite me back. I'll come back whenever you want me.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian.